When I heard the news late last night that former President Gerald Ford had died at the age of 93, a couple of bizarre things crossed my mind. One was I had just chosen him for my death pool for 2007. We all put in 10 bucks and picked the celebrities who we think are going to die in the course of a year. And I had not only put him on my list for 2007, but had chosen him captain of the team. And here, 6 days before the end of the year, he passed on at age 93. I also thought that this guy was the first president of the 1970s. And you think, well, what are you talking about? He came into office in August of 1974 after Richard Nixon resigned. I consider Richard Nixon's resignation the end of the 60s, just as I consider the beginning of the 60s to be the assassination of JFK and the subsequent arrival of the Beatles a few months later, 80 days later, and their appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. That really kicked off the 60s. Gerald Ford taking over the White House kind of kicked off the 70s. And then I also thought I got to get in touch with Bob Green. Bob has been on the show several times through the years, and a couple of years ago, we spent an hour on the air talking about his book, Fraternity, A Journey in Search of Five Presidents, in which he told stories about Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon and George Herbert Walker Bush and Jimmy Carter and, yes, Gerald Ford. And I emailed Bob, and he was gracious enough to say, yeah, I got time for you anytime, so here he is again. Hi, Bob, how are you?
Hi, Paul. I didn't realize till this morning he had died, and when I woke up, like you, I thought back to those stories from Fraternity when I went to visit him. He was a remarkable and, you know, to put it bluntly, you know, a very nice man.
In our lifetime, probably the most regular guy president, right?
There's no question about it. I mean, he told me that when he goes to buy his, I'm still talking present tense, when he went to buy his clothes in the Rancho Mirage area, he would just walk into a clothes store and, you know, wait with the other customers for a sales guy to come over. And I said, well, don't they all he says, well, about 90% of the people seem to know who I am. And I'm thinking 90%. I think it would be 100%.
Yeah.
We're talking about movies and music for some reason. And I said to him, what's your favorite movie of all time? And President Ford stopped for a few seconds. And he says, well, I'd have to say Mrs. Doubtfire. And I said, Mrs. Doubtfire? He said, yeah, Betty and I went to the movies, and that Robin Williams is really funny. I mean, there are no real walls that President Ford put up, you know? He was a guy, and he didn't try to lord it over people, and I think that's why people liked him so much. There was such a strong wellspring of affection for him in the country.
Now, all of these guys who have served as President of the United States, of course, get Secret Service protection during their time in the Oval Office and then for years afterward. Did Ford have Secret Service guys around him when you met him?
He did, although he lived in a house. Rancho Mirage is a strange community. It's pretty wealthy. It's in the Palm Springs area. And he lived in a house that I think Ginger Rogers and her mother used to live in. And above Mr. Ford's desk, it looked like a home office. When I say his office, it's like your dad when he retired would set up an office in his house. It was that sort of, you know, converted bedroom looking office. And above his desk, he had the seal of the President of the United States. But there was sliding doors on the wall, like sliding window doors, and you slid the doors and walked outside with him. And it was literally on a golf course, so it was right across from a fairway, and you would stand with President Ford and watch the golfers knocking the ball toward the green, and the golfers were just far enough away as they paraded from the tee to the green on this particular fairway that they probably didn't quite know. And I said to President Ford, do you think those golfers know who they're looking over at? And he said, I have no idea. And he would stand there, especially after his health got bad and he didn't move around as well as he used to. He would watch the other guys play golf. And I still don't know if they knew that was Gerald Ford watching them.
How odd to not know that there's a presidential home right there on the side of the golf course that you're
right.
Walking by.
Now, I'm sure some of the golfers did know, but it was just, he was so... There was when I was there was some commotion. There was like laughing and talking outside his office, and it was some of the people on his staff, and you know, you could hear it in his office. And I wondered, you know, some presidents, former presidents, you would figure are such sticklers for everything being done by the book. And I said, does it bother you at all that these folks are talking and laughing in outside your office and it comes in here? Does it bother you while you're working? He says, no, as long as they keep it down to a dull roar.
But if that ball comes in my yard, I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
In the time you spent with him, was he open about his time in the White House?
Well, what he was most open about was the amount of hurt he felt for not winning. He was aware every day of his life that he was a president who was never elected president and a president who was never elected vice president because he took over when Richard Nixon left office. I think the rest of us, because I think most people appreciate the job he did of healing the country and bringing the country together, I think most of us have, if not forgotten the fact that he wasn't elected, at least pushed it to the side. But it was with him every day, and it was a great pain, a great heartache in his life. And every time he would talk about being president, he would say, now, when I was president, and I was never elected president, he really, really thought that, or hoped that the country would say to him, thank you, and elect him on his own. And he lost to Jimmy Carter. And one of the things, he can tell you, because I looked it up after I left him, he can tell you down to the single digit the number of votes in several states that would have made him win the presidency. Mm. He knows exactly how many votes in this state and that state. And I, as I say, when I left him, I wrote it all down, and I went and I looked it up, and he's right. And yet, as much heartache as he felt when the country said, we don't want you, we want Jimmy Carter, and that's how he took it, as a personal rejection, as much heartache as he felt, he grew to like Carter so much that he could push that aside, and they became the best friends at that time of all the former presidents. He would call Carter, he would, when they were in the same cities, they would get up early and have breakfast together. It takes a pretty remarkable guy to look at the man who has defeated you and taken everything you wanted and decide, I like this man.
Yeah.
And be his friend. And they really were friends.
That's why it was odd for me to see George Herbert Walker Bush going around with Bill Clinton and apparently having a similar kind of friendship that
right.
Ford and Carter developed.
And in fact, that's why I just sort of like modified what I said by saying at the time, because I think George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton are very much as odd a couple as Ford and Carter were. The other thing about President Ford that just really touched me, he was captain of his high school football team in Grand Rapids, and in 1930, they won the state championship on Thanksgiving Day, and there were 30 varsity lettermen on that football team, and they formed a group called the 30-30 Club, 1930 championship, 30 varsity lettermen. And every Thanksgiving after that, the 30-30 Club would get together for a reunion on the anniversary of their championship game. In 1974, the first Thanksgiving that Gerald Ford was in the White House during all that anguish and turmoil, and he needed people around him who he could trust and who made him feel comfortable, he invited the surviving members of the 30-30 Club, his old high school football teammates, to the White House. And that's where they had Thanksgiving breakfast, as their old captain's guest in the White House.
Mm.
That's who he wanted around him, the guys he felt at home with.
Wow. In thinking about him, I was also looking up some other stuff today. And, in fact, I put up on my website a picture of that famous New York Daily News headline, a front page that they put up in, I think it was October of 1975, Ford to City,
Drop Dead.
Where he had said, no, we're not going to give a federal bailout to New York City, which was going through a major fiscal crisis. And you talked about, you know, he knows every vote that he didn't get and that Carter did get. A lot of people think that that headline was very much responsible for him not winning next year because he lost New York. And if he had won New York, then he probably would have been reelected president again. But instead, New York looked at him through the eyes of that Daily News headline as the guy who had to abandon them, and so he didn't get their vote. And I think that, as much as his pardon of Nixon, may have contributed to his defeat. What do you think?
Definitely those two things together. I think the pardon of Mr. Nixon would be the dominant one. Mrs. Ford, Betty Ford, told me that he never let out to the public just how crushed he was by the hurt of that defeat. But he said it just really knocked him down for a long time. They were worried about his just how depressed he was.
Mm.
You know, he was the best athlete probably who has ever lived in the White House. He was a wonderful athlete, and yet because of a couple of clumsy steps which were captured by the cameras, he was portrayed as this klutz, which he just wasn't.
Right.
He was, you know, there have been no presidents who are as good as athletes as Gerald Ford. And he told me that when he would go skiing, both during his presidency and afterwards, that the photographers would sort of stake out the ski slopes, and he said if he would ski for 2 hours, there would be a time when he fell down. I mean, it always happens. Skiers do, even the best skiers.
Yep.
And they would wait for those 2 hours, and of course they would get him. And he said he used the word fanny. He said they'd catch me falling on my fanny. He says, and of course that's the picture that would be on front pages around the world.
Right.
He said, and you know, it's supposed to be in good fun, he said, but inside I'm thinking, this is not really fair. This is not really fair. You wait for me to stumble, and you take the picture, and that's the one you use. He says, and you put a big smile for the public, but it's just, I felt it wasn't really fair. And I said, did you ever complain about it? And Mr. Ford said, no, because if you complain, then they're going to do it more. So I pretended not to care, and I pretended to think it was funny. But I'm thinking, I fall down once, and that's what you put on the front page.
Yeah, and in that regard, he must not have been very fond of Chevy Chase.
I didn't ask him whether he was fond of him or not. But again, this is a guy, I just admired him so much because of the equanimity with which he faced the world. I mean, I remember, I think it may have been his first speech when he addressed the nation, and when he said, I'm fully aware that I was not elected with your ballots, so I asked you to confirm me with your prayers. And he himself told me that since he was in high school, he has said the same prayer every night. As a teenager, all through his young life, and in the White House, and after he left the White House, he was a man who prayed for help every night.
Bob Green writes about Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush and James Earl Carter in his book Fraternity, A Journey in Search of Five Presidents. It came out a couple years ago, but would still be a great book to pick up and read. The book that we talked about a couple of times this year is And You Know You Should Be Glad. That's a bestseller as well and is also a terrific read. And what are you working on for 2007?
Just trying to think about it now. I'm trying to decide how or whether to update And You Know You Should Be Glad for the eventual paperback release. I got a couple ideas I'm sort of banging around. I'm not sure which one I'll do first. But I just, as you know from our two conversations about it, And You Know You Should Be Glad, which is the story of lifelong friendship, is so close to my heart that I'm still very much wedded to that book. You know,
yeah.
I'm still... That's my book, but
yep.
I mean I'm banging some stuff out now. But I like you, Paul, when I heard about Gerald Ford, it made that time very. In fact, I dug out a handwritten letter he had written to me. I had sent him an early galley of Fraternity, and you know he wrote a long note back, handwritten, talking about in the visit and things I'd written in the book. And he says, I just turned 91 at the time. He says, and I'm doing pretty well, you know, for 91. The magic of Gerald Ford is that he made all of us think he was just like us.
Mm.
And, of course, he had something. No, he wasn't elected, but he ran this country. And I think all of us, I shouldn't say all of us, because this country never does anything altogether. But I think those of us who are willing to give people a break have to say, at the time he came into office with the turmoil and the anguish in this country falling apart, he found the strength to do a pretty good job.
Bob, as always, it's a pleasure having you on. You're a great storyteller, and I appreciate your time here this afternoon.
Paul, anytime. I always enjoy it.
Hope to talk to you in the new year.
Okay.
Bob Green here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.